So Swiss German would be an option for me, English, because German, as you know, the Swiss don't speak proper German. My 6-year-old digital native is telling people rather proud that his dad invented the fastest internet in Switzerland. It's called Fiber 7. I was, thank you. When we went to Greece for vacation, I was in a Target conflict because I had to explain him why he couldn't watch YouTube. I mean, Greece, you know, it's maybe a bit difficult. But as a matter of fact, here in Hamburg, it's not any better. I'm next door in the hotel Intercity, and they offer free Wi-Fi with 256 kilobit. If you want 5 meg internet, you pay 8 euro extra per day. So this is where we are in 2015. A few words about me. I married one son, as I said. He was born 2009, and he was able to unlock the iPhone with the age of 17 months. No one showed him how. My early connection with digital techniques was about 1978, when I was playing with these chips 7400. Who knows them? Raise your hand. Few, thanks. Later on, I did an apprenticeship as a Fernmelde- und Elektronikapparate-Mondeur, and I started to do IT business about 1991. And 1996, almost 20 years ago, we started with Linux stuff. My first Linux was SUSE 4.2. In year 2000, we started with Init 7, and later on, I became president of the SwissX Association. This is an association which runs an internet exchange. I had also my time in the startup called Satoo, did some network architecture, OTT, IP television. And besides, I need a hobby, so I'm also a politician for the Social Democrats in my city parliament, already 8 years. And then I started with the other hobby, Fiber 7, as you know. Oh, besides, I was also working in the internet expert group of the Social Democrats Switzerland, and the internet paper was adopted earlier this month by the National Delegiertenversammlung. I don't know what this is in English. So, buffering sucks. Ladies and gentlemen, this talk is not about Deutsche Telekom, it's not about peering, it's not about interconnection, it's about these thousands and millions of youngsters out there which want to watch YouTube in HD resolution without buffering. So let's quickly look at the reason why YouTube and all the other video buffers. So it's usually It's lack of bandwidth, so if you have a 2 meg DSL or you have a intercity Wi-Fi, free Wi-Fi with 250 kilobits, so HD video is not possible. Sometimes they have old PCs, so CPU power is an issue these days, no longer relevant. Wi-Fi quality sucks sometimes. This is rather an individual issue, and sometimes we have an oversubscription of the shared node, mainly in cable networks. Streaming source can be too far away. If you stream from the US, it doesn't really go well. That's why we have so many CDN, content delivery network systems, close to the end users. Then adaptive streaming can be an advantage, but also disadvantage. You cannot turn it off. When you watch HD and the connection sucks, you just cannot keep it on HD. It just drops to SD or low resolution. It works, yes, but Claire Underwood in low res is not so cool. Routing algorithm issues, sometimes it's a mismatch of client and server. If your client is assigned to the wrong CDN server, then it's also slow. Any cost routing is a trick sometimes. And last but not least, and the most important thing, it's oversubscribed interconnections. We go back quickly to the old days, the caller pays. When you call your mother-in-law and you talk with her, well, she talks to you for 45 minutes, and you say hello and goodbye, you still pay the call. So, with YouTube, it's not any different. You click YouTube, and then YouTube talks to you for hours, maybe, and then you say goodbye, basically. So, is the broadband customer calling the YouTube server, or is it vice versa? Is the YouTube server calling the broadband customer? Probably it's the broadband customer who calls. But still, the data is flowing from the server to the client. But the client is causing the traffic because he is requesting the traffic. And if we look at the structure of the internet, we have basically the doesn't work here. Red button is dead. Never mind. We have the end user to the right. We have the provider network, and the end user is only connected to the provider's network. On the left side, we have all the content in the internet. We have the media and video and streaming and torrent and you name it. But there is always only one way going to the end user. It's the yellow marked interconnection points, and there is no way around them. And this basically means the provider can monopolize the end customer, at least as long as he's connected or subscribed. There is no alternative way. So this gives the provider a position of power. On the other hand, these interconnection points used to be for a long period of time so-called zero settlement interconnections. And they are basically the foundation of the internet. Without zero settlement peering, without interconnection, the internet wouldn't exist as we know it. The broadband provider, mainly the incumbent, the ex-monopolist, or large cable operators, they tend to become more and more restrictive to provide sufficient interconnection capacity. Not upgrading interconnection to the requirements is very common these days, and it's a passive-aggressive behavior. So the many providers, to name a few, Deutsche Telekom, they just do nothing. They just wait. And the end customer are suffering. Buffering is very common, especially during prime time. And this is basically what the topic of the main topic of this conference is. It's a gated community. The provider creates a gated community for his own end customers. So, as I said before, the data is flowing from the server, from the video server to the end customer. It's about 50 times more traffic flowing to the client. And the usual traffic ratio we have for broadband providers is 1 to 5 or 1 to 10. So they're pulling about 10 times more traffic towards the end customer. And then we have this interconnection policy, so they don't do anything. As I said before, they just oversubscribe the existing interconnection, and if you want to upgrade, you have to have a traffic ratio of about 1 to 1.5 to 1.3, but no video stream service can deliver traffic and also maintain the traffic ratio. No content provider can. So all they can do is they can pay money to get upgraded. And if they don't pay, data is stuck in congestion, and the clients are suffering and see the buffering sign. Large broadband providers, such as the incumbents and cable providers, they want to get paid twice. They are able to force the money due to the temporary monopoly, as I explained, and they can ask money from the end customer and, on the other hand, also from the content. This is called double-sided market. And if they don't pay, the content is not paying, this is what we see. And sometimes, as a side note, the end customer pays but still sees this. But IP interconnection would be cheap. The business cost per broadband customer is just a few cents per month. And if the provider would invest this, people would be happy. And on top, content providers are easy to deal for peering or provide cache servers, etc. So please talk to our community fellows of Akamai, Apple, Amazon, Facebook, Google, Limelight, Netflix. T is not telecom, it's Twitch, Answer2, and a lot of others. So traffic congestion is costly. I took a random Google search and was looking for how much traffic is actually costing. And Die Welt showed the result. Staus kosten in jedem Haushalt 509 Euro pro Jahr. So my assumption was, if traffic jam is costing money, then probably data traffic jam is also costing some money. But I figured that no one was really exploring that field yet. So I thought I'm going to do a little Milchbüchli Rechnung. So, when I was a child, the milkman came every morning, and we just put our order into the Milchbüchli, and he put the milk into the box outside of the house. And by the end of the month, we went to the shop and paid our Milchbüchli Rechnung. So this is my quick calculation. We have about 30 million broadband connections in Germany. I assumed that everybody is waiting for 1 minute accumulated while watching Netflix, YouTube, whatever. Probably this is far too less. Who thinks 1 minute is fine, or who thinks 1 minute is not enough? Oh, okay. So let's stick with 1 minute for the calculation. And I also assumed that €5 per hour waiting is a good salary. So if you think €5 is not enough, so you can adapt the calculation. This is called Reservationslohn. I have no clue what it means, but this was on Wikipedia for time. When you take a job or refuse a job, how much would be the value for the spare time? So this is my calculation. If you wait 1 minute per day, this is 6 hours per year. If you multiply this with the €5, every broadband customer would be lose €30 per year. This sums up with 30 million broadband subscriber to €900 million per year. This is the economic damage in Germany per year. And as we can assume that a large part of the buffering is caused by the insufficient interconnection, especially during prime time when everybody wants to watch Netflix, this is also a result of the restrictive peering policy of the incumbent and large cable operators. And the ability for them to force some extra money out of this double-sided market power, as I explained, they probably would gain a few millions. I don't have exact figures, but I assume it's probably some 10, 20, 30 millions per year they could force through this market power. On the other hand, we have the damage of 900 million euro per year, and I mean, this is how do you say that? Imbalance. So my conclusion, in democratic countries like Western Europe, the economic gain of a multi-billion company at the expense of the general public is commonly not tolerated. And then the next question is basically following my the previous talk of Thomas. When will the regulators wake up and force every market participant to cooperative peering and interconnection? Because the end user is suffering. The public is suffering. Zero settlement peering, as I explained, is rather common. Of course, the incumbent, the Deutsche Telekom lobbyists, would tell otherwise, but this is clear. The unbalanced traffic should no longer be used to refuse peering, and also disputes about interconnection should be resolved rather quick. My case against Swisscom is taking years already, and still no end, no light at the end of the tunnel. And then, last but not least, we should have broadband providers must be committed to the interest of their own end user customer base. As I said, Telekom managed to get paid twice because of their market power, and other telecoms, such as Telekom Hungaria or Swisscom, they used Deutsche Telekom and their market power as a leverage to force their also restrictive peering policy, and the regulators so far don't do much. I quote here Mark Fuhrer, this is the chief of Comcom Switzerland, nur ein fauler Regulator ist ein guter Regulator. Thank you. Questions?
Okay. Thank you, Freddy. And let's have Thomas back up on stage. And we're going to take questions, please. There's actually more than the mics. I said before, there's two right up on the top, and there's three in each aisle. So if you please line up if you have any questions, ask. And please speak into the mic. We need your question on tape. And those who are leaving now, do it silently, please. Okay, first question. Wow.
Yeah.
Over there.
I have a question for Thomas. From your talk, it sounds like you did a lot of work. Can you tell us a little bit about the budgeting that goes into have a team like that?
Yeah. So Save the Internet is a coalition of 12 NGOs, which have all their independent budget. There is no fixed budget for the work that we've been doing as a whole. All of them have transparency reports, so I cannot really speak for the budget of ADRI or Access. The organization where I'm based in Austria got a grant from the Media Democracy Foundation from 10,000 euros and money from Netflix, 10,000 euro also. And we used both for development and paying for the faxes, because in the second round of the fax tool, the provider that I was referring to was no longer paying. Otherwise, the funding in general about digital rights in Europe is awfully low. So if you compare it to the US, where you had double-digit millions going into the lobbying, it is ridiculous what resources we have here in Europe. And we are thinking about making a donation tool for the new Save the Internet. But again, that's complicated because you have 12 NGOs with very different activity scales. Like, some of them do a lot, others not so much. So how would you divide the money? These are unresolved questions that we're working on right now. If you want to support us with independent funding, then just donate to the individual organizations. EDRI, Initiative for Netzfreiheit, are probably the ones I would mention most because they have done most of the work. AccessNOW as well, but they generally have a lot of funding from the US, so I don't think they need it that much.
So to summarize, I saw a picture of your team. I saw all the work you did. You did that for 20,000 euros?
No, I never got a set. I was paid by EDRI for 4 months when I was working in Brussels with them directly for the first reading. But otherwise, this was mostly free time. I got my expenses covered for travel. But other than that, I'm doing this in my spare time. And also now I'm employed. I work for a data protection NGO, so they are allowing me to do a lot of my stuff also for net neutrality. But yeah.
We're all elephants. We do it for peanuts. Okay. Yeah. Number one, go ahead.
Yeah, hello. Hi, Thomas. Thanks a lot for your work. That's great. I have a question about the involvement of the business, the angels and the companies. What is the reason, what do you think, why they came so late into this discussion in Germany, and what probably can we do to change this in the future? Because I think that's they are great allies in this fight.
Yeah, that's you're asking exactly the right question. Sadly, in Europe, you have no organized voice for startups or for SMEs when it comes to digital rights issues. And you would have to work with them to get them involved in the debate. They were really late to the party, and then again, mostly activated through US networks. So the connection between the civil rights scene here and the business scene, particularly the one which is organized in Brussels with European umbrellas, is very weak. So everything you can do there to strengthen this connection would be great. But I don't have those business contacts. I got a few people involved in the first reading stuff, but we would definitely need more people that act as multipliers to get more companies involved. Particularly now, when we enter into a new phase with the BEREC guidelines, we no longer lead the loud arguments of many people. We need more the arguments from the business side, from the universities, from those people who run networks. These arguments are better suited to make a difference with the regulators. Mm-hmm. Because
and to add, don't underestimate the influence of the lobbyists of the big names. I mean, the telecoms and the Liberty Globals, they have a lot of money, and they try to influence the politicians as good as they can. They do a good job from their perspective.
You can be sure that the telecoms will have people for all 28 regulators now continuously lobbying for an upcoming 9 months.
Indeed.
The question is, who is on our team?
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Is there a question from the internet while we're at it?
Yes, there's a question. It is whether peering providers should differentiate between virtual private network traffic and public traffic. And is the where is the line between internal network and the public internet?
What should I say? This is a difficult question. I mean, basically, if you overcommit your backbone, then there is always plenty of traffic or plenty of capacity. So there shouldn't be any differentiation. It's just networks should provide enough capacity, and then we're good. A common argument from the big names: oh, we are investing millions and millions and millions in broadband expansion, but unfortunately, they stop investing right at the end of their own backbone, so they don't invest any money. And that would be only a little percentage of the whole of the total investment for the interconnections.
Okay. There is another question at number one.
Yeah. I have a question about buffering. So the most of the content in the web is delivered over TCP/IP. And will changing the media to something like UDP, which has lower overhead over TCP/IP, will that change the situation?
Not really. No.
Not really?
No. it won't help. I mean, packet loss is packet loss, regardless whether it's TCP or it's UDP.
You answered my question then.
Okay, well, that was a short answer. Next question, please. Please talk into the mic.
So when I came here this year, I had the impression that at Digital Subscriber Line connections, not only the bandwidth is bad, but also the ping gets up way high. Mm-hmm. Of course, I mean, at home I have fiber 7 nowadays, so I just thought I got spoiled by fiber connections. But I noticed that ping times went up from, well, from a couple of years ago, 60 to 80 milliseconds from sites in your neighborhood, more or less, to nowadays 80 to 160 milliseconds. So where's the problem there?
Well, the latency is directly related. If the provider is not delivering enough bandwidth, then ping goes up. That's a normal behavior of TCP.
So the problem is also at the interconnection sites?
Probably, yeah. Most likely. You can find out if you do traceroute. Then you see where, well, there is a long presentation how to interpret traceroute properly. If you look for a NANOC traceroute, you should find this lecture. But that would probably give some indication.
All right, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Next question from the internet, just in between, and then we'll go back. Go ahead.
Is Netflix a gated community by itself? And are you sure that their interests will align with the movement of net neutrality in the long run?
We should differentiate between Netflix content and Netflix interconnections. Mm-hmm. So for the content, I probably would say yes, but I'm not the expert. This would be then layer 7 in the OSI model. I'm talking here on layer 3. This is content agnostic. And Netflix they are one of the good guys because they really help to deliver the packets. And I know them personally, a few fellows from the peering community. They are the good guys, definitely.
Just also to ask this question for the European debate. Netflix was one of the good guys in the US, and they also supported, of course, the European movement. But again, they are so big that I wouldn't really trust them as an ally, because they could also pay, they could also survive in a double-sided market. And for them, in the growing emerging markets like Europe, where they just have started, it's probably risky to allow for this new type of anti-net neutrality business models. But in the consumer side, when net neutrality is seen as an end user issue, I think so far the interests mostly align. On interconnection, they have their own interests, of course.
Yeah. So I can say Netflix is definitely paying Deutsche Telekom. Otherwise, no single Deutsche Telekom user would be able to watch any movie on Netflix. So.
Okay.
For sure.
We're short for time, so please, last two questions, one, number two first. Keep it short, please. Talk into the mic.
Regarding your first talk, do you have an explanation for the behavior of the European Commission in behavior of the net neutrality debate? I especially think of the behavior of Günther Oettinger, who repeatedly said his ridiculous lie of and net neutrality kills, and he repeated it again and again, even if it was, even if there was no reason behind it. And do you have an explanation for this behavior of the Commission, mm-hmm. and Juncker and this?
For that argument, we had this great YouTube video, Net Neutrality Kills, if you search it, you'll find it, or Net Neutralität tötet in German. That deconstructs this argument of Oettinger. But in general, and you can go back to the previous Commissioner Neelie Kroes that I showed, our strong suspicion is that the deal was that the telecom industry has to give up a little bit of their profits when it comes to roaming, but on the other side, they gain a lot of future profits on the abolishment of net neutrality. And so it was like, okay, we need a populist argument. Neelie Kroes also needs a quick win at the end of her career. And this was again, like, you take a little bit there and put it there for the telecoms industry. And Oettinger is a big industrial favor guy. He is always for big business.
Okay, short for time. Last question, number one.
Hi. So what strategy should an ISP use when the capacity on their backbone is fully loaded? Like first in, first out, or what is your idea about that? Because the capacity is limited. So when there's so much traffic that everything is stuck.
Upgrade.
Yeah, invest in the network.
I mean, sorry, a 10 gig port is now some 3,000 euro, including optic and cross connect.
Okay.
It's not that much. Upgrade.
Okay, thank you. Let's have a hand.